You're listening to The Wicked Horror Show, powered by the Dorkening Podcast Network. For more information, check out thedorkening.com.
This episode of Wicked Horror Show was broadcast live to Facebook. In this episode, we're talking about the movie 3, An Eye for an Eye. We're joined by two of the actors in the movie, Mike Stanley, who was in the most current season of Ozark on Netflix. And we're also joined by actor Todd Bruno. I know him from Film Riot, which is a web series I absolutely love. Very educational. And he's awesome on that show as well, and he's awesome in this movie. And of course, if you like what you hear, head over to facebook.com/thedorkening every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for a live show just like this one. Open chat room where you can talk to the guests. And also head over to thedorkening.com to check out all the other shows on the Dorkening Podcast Network. Go subscribe, leave a comment. It really helps us out. And last, but certainly not least, our sponsor, Deadly Grounds Coffee. Go to deadlygroundscoffee.com. Pick up some awesome. It's so good. I just ordered another batch. I have some new flavors coming. I've reordered the maple walnut. It's fantastic. I'm not even a flavored coffee guy, but I really enjoy their stuff. Deadlygroundscoffee.com. But first, enjoy the show.
With us today, we have Kevin.
What's going on, everybody?
Wolfie.
Ow!
And no Yo-Yo or Tony today. We do have Mike Stanley from 3, An Eye for an Eye, and also Todd Bruno.
Hi, guys.
Hi. Thank you guys so much for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having us. We appreciate it.
So, yeah, thanks for letting us check out the movie as well. I kind of wait to watch the movies until the day of the show, because I want it to be like fresh in my mind. I don't want to watch it like on Sunday and then be like, I've watched this many movies since then. Yeah. But as soon as I turned on the screen, I saw Todd, and I was like, holy crap, I know him, and I know that he does good work. And I messaged Wolfie, because we're big fans of Film Riot, and you were in a bunch of the shorts with that Ryan did on Film Riot. But yeah, you killed it on those as well. So I'm like, all right, I'm in for a treat right now. So this is going to be good stuff.
That's great to hear, man. I appreciate that.
And I thoroughly enjoyed this one. It's got a really cool twist at the end. And
it's got like 3 twists.
Oh, yeah. A little bit. Yeah. Like, I was thinking, like, I mean, sometimes I tend to figure things out, but I didn't figure this one out. I was thinking, I'm sorry, go ahead, Wolfie. Yeah,
I felt the same way. I said during sit down, you know, this is one of those movies where you start out on one path and you just wind up somewhere else, and you're going, I didn't see. I'm with you, man. We both seen, Kevin and I combined, we've probably seen more movies than a lot of people. But I mean, and so it's not that we're trying to figure the movies out. It's just that you sit there after a while and you go, okay, I know what's going to happen.
Yeah,
you know, it just happens. You know, that didn't happen this time. I don't know if it's just me going, stop it.
No, even some of the, like the little like things that they leave throughout the movie make it kind of make you think that it's something else, and then it's just like, okay, he's having a vision of this, so this is what it is, but he's going through this, so he's not remembering it, and then all of a sudden it's like, that's not it at all, this is crazy.
I think that's one of the coolest things about this script and the way Lou wrote it is that was her intention. She did not want people to be able to figure it out, because with horror movies, one of the stigmas is I knew what was going to happen. I guessed the end 15 minutes into the film, and she didn't want that to happen. And I've talked to so many people who've watched this movie and thought they knew the ending, and then that last twist in the end completely throws them for a loop, and that's so satisfying.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like, well, the funny thing is with this one, you're not quite – you're like, okay, she keeps on saying something to him throughout the movie, and I brought it up before, it's like, you know, stop saying that to me, you know, and I'm not going to really go into definition what this is about.
We don't want to ruin it for people.
But yeah, so you're like, okay, well, then she keeps on bringing this up. She's off her rocker. And then a little bit of time goes by, and you go, well, he's off his rocker.
Yeah.
And then you're thinking about the third, you're thinking about it, and you're like, maybe they're all just off their rocker, and they just haven't quite, you know. And that's not quite sure what's happening. So you just go along for the ride, man.
Oh, yeah.
And but what yeah. a ride it is. Oh, yeah.
So how did this whole thing come to be? Because I know, Todd, you're a producer on it as well, right?
Yeah, yeah. Luke contacted me about a year before we shot, and she sent me the initial script and asked what I thought of it. And on my first read, I was like, wow, this is – I immediately thought it was the best thing that I've seen her write thus far. She's had – what I think 5 movies now in distribution internationally. So, I immediately said, I love this. She said she had me in mind for one of the roles. And I said, I hope it's the he role. it's a great part, but for me, when I read he, it immediately scared me, from an acting standpoint. I was like, wow. Cause every time I read a role, and Mike's probably the same way, you read a screenplay and you immediately see yourself. If I was playing that, what would I do? And as I'm reading the role of he, I'm constantly thinking, wow, wow. I don't know if I could do that. Wow. I don't know if I could do that. And constantly while I'm reading it. So by the time I finished reading it, I was like, wow, I don't know if I could do that, but I really want to try. And that's when Lou said, yeah, I want you to play he. And I'm like, awesome. And I'm also terrified. So that's how the whole thing started. So we kind of – I helped her produce it. That sort of started the ball rolling. She got the funding for it. And then we shot it in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Nice. What kind of timeline from you know, getting the first script to final edit?
I think it was just under a year, if I remember correctly, somewhere around 8 months.
Well, yeah, final edit. It didn't even seem like it was that long. I don't know. It seemed like it was pretty fast. I thought we started hitting the first. Well, it was about a year when we first went into the festival circuit. I'm not even sure. It seemed like a trailer came out relatively fast, I thought, but I don't know.
Yeah. I was just talking about from concept to production, or first draft of the script to production. Somewhere around 8 months by the time we got it all put together, and scouting locations and casting. And of course we had 2 of the roles already cast. And then we posted a casting notice for the third role of it, and that's how we found Mike.
Yep.
So how did that? Was there an audition process, or was it something where he already knew you? Or
no, I didn't know anyone. I jokingly say I'm the new kid in the band. I saw someone actually tagged me in the post for the casting notice. And it was a director friend of mine, Chris Etheridge, who had done Attack of the Morningside Monster, and he and Lou knew each other. And so he tagged me, and so I reached out, and Lou sent me sides, and I did a self-tape. And then she sent me a different set of sides, and I did a self-tape. And then we did all the legalities of non-disclosures and this and that and the other, and she sent me the script to read. And so I read it. And then we agreed on I was going to take the role, and I think I was on set 2 weeks, 3 weeks later, and that's when I met everyone for the first time, and it was Todd and I's first day of shooting. So we all met the same day, or I met everyone the same day. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I'd met our makeup effects artist Darla Wrigley. She had to do some prosthetic stuff and some work going into the film. So I met her before we started production, but she was the only crew member I had met at that point.
Nice. You guys seem to meld pretty well together. I mean, it's especially for lower budget movies, mm-hmm. you know, it's very easy for movies to kind of go bad quick. You know, we've seen like, there'll be like, there's some actors and there's some like movies that I love, but that there's like one saving grace to the movie, and the rest of it's kind of like, yeah, they could have done wait, but with this is a small cast and you guys all work, you know, very well together. Yeah. It really is, you know,
we all got along fantastic and had a great time. And yeah, I mean, you know, and we all come from a theater background, which was nice. So we really went into it with character and trying to stay on top of the lines. Todd and I have talked about this before. There was one day we did, what was it, 13 pages of dialogue in one day. So, I mean, you gotta be on top of it, and it's just an emotional roller coaster, and that's just, you know, that's the job. And that's what you're going into it.
That was a major concern when we were casting, because we knew we had a short shooting schedule. We had 12 days, I think, to shoot the whole thing. Yeah. And there were some days when we were shooting several pages, six to eight pages, I think, was the average. But there was one day we had to shoot 13 pages with me and Mike. Yeah. And you need a theater actor to be able to do that, to memorize 13 pages to shoot in one day. You need someone who knows how to do that. You have to be sort of particular in how you cast that. So I was really happy we ended up with Mike. And then aside from that, it was a huge risk because, like you said, we met on the first day of shooting. Yeah. So we had no time to get to know each other or anything. And luckily, I mean, Mike's super cool, and we sort of hit it off right away. And we ended up having a great time shooting. But I sort of see it as we kind of got lucky.
Yeah, it was a great experience. It was a fantastic experience. Yeah.
Plus, I'm sure the 13 pages was involved with Mike maybe not being in a situation that was probably very comfortable.
Well, I was in a chair, you know.
Okay. All right.
Arms up here. So, you know, it was, yeah.
13 pages. I'm sure your arms get a little tired after a while.
A little bit. That's okay. It's part of the job. Sorry. Right.
I don't know that Mike was in a comfortable position anytime during the shoot. Oh, maybe.
Maybe once. Laying on the floor or something at one
point. Or outside the hospital or something.
That wasn't me.
Oh, okay. So that's not even you.
Yeah, that wasn't even me. That was, if I'm not mistaken, I'd already wrapped at that point. And that was that Bill?
That was Bill in the bag. Yeah.
Our director of photography, Bill Schweikart, that was him lying there. So that wasn't even me. Yeah.
I do have to say that axe scene totally threw me off. It was like I was not expecting that, and like you pick it up.
It happened
like,
so quick.
I know, and it's like it's painful to watch.
Oh, awesome! That's terrific. That was actually one of the most difficult scenes to edit. We tortured ourselves over that because every way we cut it together, it didn't seem to work. And we went over it and over it. Me and Lou and our other producer, Alan Hanna, recut it. So I'm glad that in the end it had the effect that we were looking for.
And I think if it was longer, it may not have been as effective. So the fact that like you spent so much time previously and something ticked you off enough to go down there and just be like, all right, you know what? This toodles and I'm out. You know, that was just kind of like, oh, this guy's got problems.
Actually, that scene that you just mentioned, Leo, is why I met the special effects person beforehand with everybody. So, yeah.
I was wondering if it was that one or the one a little bit later. But
I was wondering about that one, too.
Yeah. I think everybody is. But, yeah.
Oh, that wasn't a prosthetic.
Oh.
It's... That's what I had to pay to be in the film.
Okay. Good job, I guess.
So, actually, that would answer some of the body parts that they had to move for the Snells, you know.
So. Speaking of the Snells, that's one thing that we did talk about a little bit before the show.
Yeah.
Mike, in the most current season of Ozark.
Yep. Ozark season 2. Yep.
Yeah,
very cool.
It was
a great experience and great crew and everybody was great. Jason Bateman was great. I've got a picture with him, and it was fun. Yeah, it was a good experience.
And for those of you watching, if you're not watching Ozark right now, that is a must watch. Before you go to watch Ozark, check the links down below or up above. You find a link to Three and I for an Eye available now on Amazon. You can get the actual DVD or video on demand, however you want to watch it. But Ozark was absolutely amazing. But what we're going to do now is we're going to show the trailer for those watching. We'll try to show it a couple times throughout tonight. And which one of you two fine gentlemen would like to introduce the trailer?
Todd, I'll let you do it this time. I'll do it next time. Go ahead.
Okay, sure. Hope you guys enjoy this. This is the trailer for 3, An Eye for an Eye. I hope it gives you an idea of what the movie's going to be like, but not too much, because you're never going to guess the ending.
Okay.
I don't know what you're talking about.
In how many pieces is she going to find you?
You need to take your medication, or you lose control.
Tell me we have the right guy downstairs.
You have to believe me.
You could have stopped this.
Where is this thing taking me?
Hello? I'm gonna move your car back about 10 feet so I can get my car through.
Oh my God.
Aren't you gonna help me?
I can't touch him. He never asked you to do this for me.
He has to pay for what he did to you.
And if he refuses to confess?
He will have no other choice if he ever wants to get out of here.
Scream all you want. No one can hear you out here.
I need you to confess.
I don't know what you're talking about.
In how many pieces is she going to find you?
You need to take your medication, or you lose control.
Tell me we have the right guy downstairs.
You have to believe me.
You could have stopped this.
Be 11, it may be 8. I'm still not sure.
Yeah.
That you know of.
They all look very similar, so one of them could be another one.
Yeah. Yeah. And some of them are cousins, but I don't
know. Not? What?
Okay, Stephen Chang says, is there an Eye for an Eye 1 or 2? No, the title's 3, An Eye for an Eye. You're going to have to watch it to figure out why
you'll figure out why it's 3. You'll figure it out.
I had a different reasoning of why it was 3. Well, when the movie first started, I'm like, oh, I know why it's 3.
Why is that? Okay. I'm curious.
For the stuff in the basement? You talking?
Yeah. Yeah, that's partly right. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
And the other thing is at the very end.
It could be, yeah.
Right.
Yep.
There's numerous reasons why it's 3. Yeah.
So just pick your favorite and go with it. Right?
Yeah, exactly. That's pretty much it. Yeah.
It has to do with the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost.
That's it. Exactly.
The Holy Trinity.
Yeah.
So I started talking to Todd a bit about Film Riot while we're playing the trailer, and Wolfie wanted me to stop for the show. So it's interesting. And I just, cause I had questions about like how he got involved with Film Riot. Like, how did you get involved with Ryan? And for those who don't know, Film Riot is a very entertaining instructional kind of
YouTube series. Channel.
Yeah. On YouTube with Ryan Connolly, who like extremely, he's just very good at explaining how to do things. He shows you how to do like visual effects. He shows you how to even come up with like low budget dollies and stuff like that. Like, he knows what he's doing, and he just explains it very well. And he's made a lot of really, really good shorts. And Todd's been in a handful of them. And
most of the shorts have his brother and sister.
Yeah. I was asking how he was involved, like how he got involved in that.
Okay. So almost immediately after I came back to Florida from L.A., I was sort of making my transition from the stage into film, and I saw a casting notice up on one of the billboards. I don't even remember which it was, backstage maybe. And I showed up to the, I submitted myself, and they called me in to read for this film, this short film called Tell. And that's where I met Ryan and Brad, who's Ryan's Ryan's cousin. Brad's also a filmmaker. Brad was DP on this project. Ryan was directing, and he also wrote it. It was Ryan's first film out of Full Sail University, and it was my first film, coincidentally. So anyway, I went in and I read for it. They offered me a supporting role, the friend, and I accepted it. I said, yeah, it sounds great. I would love to do it. A couple of months go by and Ryan calls me back and says, would you come in and read again? And I said, sure, absolutely. And he had me read for the lead again, Taylor. And this time he offered me the part of Taylor. When he explained to me what happened in those 2 months, he said, we went all over the place looking for someone to play Taylor, because they were looking for someone. He wanted the character of Taylor to be someone tall and awkward looking, tall, skinny and awkward looking. And that's pretty much the opposite of me, which is why they offered me the other part initially. But apparently they had trouble finding someone that they liked. So they called me back in. Ryan liked my read and he offered me the part, and that's where we met. And then over the next couple of months, we had several meetings about the character, because this was a really intricate film. It's like a psychological thriller. It's a sort of a modern retelling of The Telltale Heart. And it sort of centers around Taylor. And there's only one scene of two scenes of dialogue in the entire film. It's very little dialogue. Most of its behavior, which is really, really tough, and it has to be suspenseful and very specific. So Ryan and I sort of clicked right away, right off the bat. By the time we shot, we actually, a couple of days into shooting, we sort of developed this shorthand communication where he would just give me a look or maybe say one word as an adjustment to a take that we just shot, and I would immediately know what he meant. This developed really fast. And if you know anything about film production or acting for camera, that kind of relationship with a director is super rare. Most directors have no idea how to really communicate with an actor in a way that the actor can immediately use. So when you meet someone who you have that kind of communication with, it's like finding gold. Ryan and I became fast friends. I met his entire family on the set of Tell, and we all became close. He's half Italian, and my family's Italian, so we shared that. And his folks now, when I go out to, they're in Texas now. So when I go out there to work on the Triune films and the Film Riot stuff, I call his folks Mom and Dad, and they're like family to me now. So but that first film, Tell, that's where we met and sort of developed the relationship. And he's not only one of my favorite directors to work with, but he's a super close friend now.
That's awesome.
Well, so one thing you were telling me on sit down was the fact that he trained his siblings in specific jobs.
Yeah, for that first film, for Tell, he was right out of Full Sail. So, and he didn't know anyone. They were in West Palm Beach down here at the time, and he didn't have a film crew to draw upon. So he took his family. They were all interested in this film production stuff. So he taught each of his brothers and sisters and a couple of friends. He taught each of them one crew position, and that's how we shot Tell. They were all sort of learning. Him and Brad were really the only ones who actually knew what they were doing. Brad also went to Full Sail. Ryan and Brad actually graduated together, first and second in the class. So they were the only ones who really knew what they were doing. The rest of his family and a couple of friends, he taught the film crew duties, and it actually ran pretty well.
Mm. Yeah, For, again, for those who haven't seen Film Riot, like, it's, if you start from the beginning, like, even like go back, and it's just like you see him progress as a filmmaker, and yeah. You know, his brother and sister, like, that he uses a lot, see them progress too. Like, they're pretty awesome now, and it's
yeah, like, I think hilarious. one of the most interesting things is if you go back to the like the first season when film rights started, look at Josh, Ryan's brother. Josh looks like he's about 12.
Yeah.
And then go and watch some of the new episodes, and Josh is like 25, and he has a beard, and he's a man now. The transformation's it's really stark.
Yeah. Well, it's cool. I mean, and we had said before we came back too that, you know, I was hoping that someday there'll be a Ryan Connolly like directed feature film, and that's something that may be happening. We'll keep our ears to the internet, I guess, until we find out about it. But I'm sure if that happens, I'm sure there'll be many episodes about the making of it. So,
oh, absolutely. Yeah. That's the entire purpose of the Film Riot series. It will be devoted to the making of that film, just like he has episodes now on the making of all the short films.
Yep.
This one will be huge, though. Yeah.
See, I always thought the entire idea behind Film Riot was just to validate, but video the fact that he's picking on his little brother Josh. Just, I got footage for the rest of my life of me just picking on you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, it's like a video scrapbook. Yeah.
It's kind of like it's kind of like a frat house. There's a frat house vibe that they try to one up each other and see who can get each other in the most humiliating situation. And I remember there was one episode where they chugged gallons of milk until they vomited.
Well, I'm sure that was a pleasant set to be on that day.
Well, you know, speaking of gallons of milk.
Oh, look at that. Look at that transition right there.
That was good. That was good, Leo.
So actually, before I transitioned into that, Stephen Chang was asking who the woman was in the trailer. That's Anyela McGinnis. Did I get that?
Anyela.
Right?
Yeah.
Anyela.
Anyela.
Anyela McGinnis.
Awesome. Stephen Chang, just check out the IMDb link I have in the show notes. You'll find all the information there. And gallons of milk or heavy whipping cream. You know, you need that for Deadly Grounds Coffee, our sponsor. And Kevin, what are you drinking today? What did you drink today?
I'm drinking water.
Yeah.
Like I do every Tuesday because I have to work in the morning.
Well, I have to work in the morning too.
Yeah, I know, but I like to sleep. The I do have an order planned though. We're going to be trying some new flavors at work, so
yeah,
I'm going to be ordering probably by the end of the week. Oh, and there's a chocolate almond, I guess, now that
really?
I'm gonna check that out, or everyone at work wants to check it out. So, and then it's getting cool around here now, so it's time for the maple walnut. So we're gonna be buying some of that as well. Yeah. But Deadly Grounds Coffee, it's what I live off of, that and water.
So, Kev, even though you're drinking water, show the mug.
Well, I just have I have my travel mug. That's all, but
that's fine.
At the grounds,
yeah.
So they're at. You were talking about horror conventions earlier. You talk about the one that was out in Florida. They do the convention circuit around, you know, this part of the country, and they travel in a hearse, and their coffee is displayed in a casket, like at the convention. So it's pretty awesome.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Nice.
And
yeah.
It's the best tasting coffee I've ever had. I've given up Starbucks for these people, and it's a local
that
roaster.
Take much on my end.
Give up Starbucks for these people.
Jeez. Okay, so it's a local roaster here in Connecticut, and the way he roasts, pardon me, the way he roasts the beans is he does like an oil in the roasting process. So it's a subtle flavor, not too strong, not weak either. But my favorite is the chocolate, Death by Chocolate. I have a little bit of hazelnut left.
Most of the stuff that I do is just regular plain coffee. Like I do like a dark roast or whatever, but the flavored stuff is good.
Yeah, I love the flavored coffee, but you know what? Enough.
Just play the ad. Get this over with. So we can get back to the guests. Thanks.
Here we go.
Everyone thinks because you're a zombie, you don't know good coffee. Well, they're wrong. There's only one brew that gets my seal of approval. Deadly Grounds Coffee is my guilty pleasure. The aroma is so intoxicating. It brings all of my neighbors out of the woodwork. Deadly Grounds Coffee. Coffee to die for and zombie approved. It's good to get a little deadly.
Use the front door!
Oh, they're so disgusting.
During the show, really? Sure. Oh, yeah. Well, we had one actor who had to pee, and he said he was going to pee in a bucket, like, on the show.
Awesome.
Actually, that's his face. Great. Back here. That's his face right there.
David Long.
David Long.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The Mask of David Long, yeah. I'm a big fan of his. And he was going to pee in a bucket on the show. Oh. We're like, no, you don't have to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we are back. We want to urge everybody, definitely check out the show notes down below or up above. You'll find information about our sponsor, Deadly Grounds, but also more importantly, Three in Eye for an Eye, out now on DVD if you like collecting physical media, or out on VOD as well if you want to watch it tonight.
Yeah. Watch it tonight.
Watch it tonight.
And it's a quick watch, too. It's not like, you know, it's
an hour and 22 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not even an hour and a half. It moves fast, too.
Yeah, yeah. It does. Very fast.
Like, so, and tell us if you can guess the ending. If you can guess the ending, but be honest.
So, right, Wolfie's the encyclopedia, and he didn't guess the ending either. Like, he's an encyclopedia with a shirt on. So, he usually figures stuff out more so than I do, but. That's impressive that he didn't figure that out. We've all talked about the movie. Now, how would you describe this movie to anyone without giving away anything? Like, what's the best way you would do it? Mike, we haven't heard from you in a while because we were talking about Film Riot for a long time.
You know what? And I was enthralled with Todd's stories too. I swear. No, I'm kidding. No, actually,
I know you're kidding.
Actually, no, I am kidding, because I was kind of curious of Todd's background on that, too, because I'm a fan of Film Riot. I'm sorry, what did you ask? Oh, how would I describe this? I was like, what did you just ask me? I would say the best way to describe it is a psychological thriller over horror. I feel like when you look at the box cover, it has a very hostile feel to it. And just me being on the outside here, I'm not a producer on it. I'm not, you know, whatever, just as an actor. I kind of don't entirely agree with how that's sold, but I understand that you're selling a product. But to me, it's more of a psychological thriller feel to it. My friends that have seen it have said the exact same thing. So if you go into it with that, if you go into it, don't expect a bunch of like hostile type scenes. It's not that at all. There's a few, you know, scenes where you're like, ah, wow, ouch. But for the most part, I would call it a psychological thriller, because you're really going back and forth between what he and she are talking about and what it claims, and is it telling the truth or is he not telling the truth? And I think you start asking yourself that question as you go through the film.
Yeah. So.
That would be the best way I would describe it. Yeah,
and I agree with you. The cover doesn't fit the movie 100%.
I've seen the cover.
Yeah, it looks like it's the cover of like a Saw movie. Like it.
Oh, okay. It reminded me of something out of Hostel. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. It's got like a saw blade, and it has a big three, like big red three, well, and blood splattered everywhere.
It's got
two people that aren't even in the movie on the cover.
So. Correct. Yeah. And the original cover actually had my face over a saw blade, but I hadn't been in Ozark yet, so nobody knew who I was. I'm kidding. That's a joke. Probably that was true. And it's like, who's this idiot on the cover of a DVD? We don't know who he is.
Who's the guy on there now? No one knows who.
Nobody knows. Exactly. There's a guy and a girl, and it's like, even Aniela said, maybe she kind of looks like me, but it's not her, you know? So, nobody knows who I am, so don't do that.
The cover with you on the saw blade in the house, I think, is a much better cover.
I agree. You know, and not because it's me. I just think it tells the story better. But it gives you a better idea of the genre, I should say. So
it's kind of weird when distribution companies get involved, because we've all heard the stories, the horror stories, where people are like, yeah, so I made my movie, and then this distribution company came along and said, oh, well, put your movie out. And then they're like, okay, well, we need to take this out, move this over here, do this.
Yeah.
The cover art is completely wrong. We're going to change it this, and we're even changing the name.
Right.
And we've had other people come on and go that they've already had bad experiences with distribution companies. They're like, won't do it again. You know? And so they'll just self-put it out.
Yeah.
I feel bad.
From what I understand, this has been – I mean – our distribution model has been fine, you know, from, Todd would probably tell you, you know, the same thing, I guess. You know, he's the producer or one of the producers on it, but I mean, it's been fine. It's just, they changed it and, you know, and that's that. So
it doesn't change the movie. The movie's still great.
Exactly. No, yeah.
And even if it's something where, oh, look at this, this looks awesome, like, because the cover just like is eye catching, you know.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
But they're gonna see it, and then they're gonna love the movie. Then right. They might be like, why is that cover for this movie? Because it's
right.
Who is that guy? Is it special features I'm missing?
Right. Yeah. I think that's the main thing, that they didn't touch the cut of the movie, and
right.
That's the big deal.
I mean, the most important part. Yeah.
Yeah. They changed the art. They changed the title because they thought that it could they could sell it
mm-hmm.
more easily that way. As long as they didn't touch Lou's cut was the big thing. And
now, right. what was the title originally?
I was just going to ask that.
Lou Simon's 3.
Yeah,
just 3.
Lou Simon's 3. Yeah.
There was a there's a filmmaker I know, and he made his first feature, and he was so proud. He got the title of it tattooed on himself. And then it got picked up by distribution, and they changed the title.
Yep.
So now he just has like this word that doesn't really. It's that movie, same one.
What we've learned is, do not get the tattoo until the distribution deal. That's what we've learned. Yeah.
But that's something you guys do regularly, right? Whenever you're in something, you just get. So you have an Ozark tattoo.
I can't show you where it is right now, but we'll talk when we're off camera. Okay. So, yeah,
no, but it says Ozark season 2 episode 9.
Yeah, every episode, something like, yeah, whatever it is. Yeah,
just get different.
It takes up the entire butt cheek. I mean, I can't tell you where it is. It doesn't matter. Anyway, yeah.
The title of the title of the episode. Also.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yep.
Yeah.
So without giving anything away. I know it's difficult.
Leo's trying to ask something. And...
Sorry.
Without giving anything away, and I know it's very difficult to talk about this movie without, you know, since there's so many twists and turns in it, is there talk of continuing the story? And I don't want to say anything, but I got an idea for one of the remaining characters on how it could proceed.
For a sequel,
yeah.
We have not talked about that yet. I'm sure
no.
Lou would be open to that.
I'm sure if it sold and made, you know, $100 million, yeah, you'd find a way to, you know, make a sequel.
But I mean,
haven't talked about it now.
But you have an idea, you said.
I do. Again, not giving away anything, but one of the characters has a specific background. And maybe they are, you know, sort of like an avenging angel going out into the world.
Oh, gotcha. That is interesting.
Okay.
That is interesting. That's sort of because there already is sort of a, I don't even know if I can say that, but there is a feel to it that's like a popular series that was on one of the premium subscription service networks that's so obscure. No one's even.
I got it.
I don't even know what that is.
The Avenging Angel idea. And they also shot that here in Florida, that series. So that might clue you in. At least the first couple seasons they shot here.
I know what you're talking about now.
Does it begin with
I know what you're talking about now. Yeah.
Does it begin with a D and end with an Exter?
Yeah. Yeah. It rhymes with it. At least. Okay. So, yeah.
So Flexter. Okay.
Right.
I remember that show.
Yeah.
Good one. I'm sure Lou would be open to that. We have not talked about it, but it would all sort of hinge on whether she's inspired enough to write it.
Yeah.
Right. So if people who see it, if the audience wants to see more, shoot us messages. Let us know. And we'll get Lou to write one.
Nice. So Stephen Chang was asking about Netflix and Hulu. So what's the production schedule? Are you guys looking to do like Redbox and then eventually get to like Netflix and Hulu, or just stick with DVD and VOD?
I think probably eventually Netflix and places like that. The thing is, Netflix and Amazon, you can't do them both at the same time. So right now we're on Amazon. We're on VOD all over the place. We're on iTunes.
We're on Vudu. We're on Google Play. We're on a number of different platforms.
I haven't heard that you couldn't do Amazon and Netflix at the same time.
No, yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, they're totally competitors. Yeah.
Well, it's something you see a lot of. If it's free on Amazon, it can't be free on Netflix. And if they're renting it, so if you're paying to rent it on Amazon, why would you, have it not paid for on Netflix?
Right.
Even though you're paying with your subscription fees, but whatever.
Right. Yeah. Right. I don't know if this. I mean, Todd, maybe you can tell me better. But I've had a director friend of mine who filmed that I was in that they were doing a distribution, trying to get it out. But they said that the last thing you want to do is get it to Netflix, because once it's on Netflix, no one's ever going to buy it. They're not going to buy a physical DVD. They're not going to buy it on Amazon. They're not, because it's part of Netflix, then you can watch it. That, I mean, this was before you saw the rise of Netflix original series type things.
Yeah.
But this was, if you're an independent filmmaker that made a film for less than $500,000, something like that, if you can get it on Netflix, great. But after that, that's probably the last stop for it. Because Netflix has changed so much just in the past 3 years of their platform model.
Even like very, very small budget stuff, like you just don't find it anymore.
Right. Yeah. Whereas you did 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And now you just don't see it. Yeah.
Like, well, I agree. Like a majority of people are not going to go out and buy it, but there are some that will, like myself.
Yeah, sure.
Like, I buy the original Netflix series that I love. I buy them on Blu-ray because I want to have a physical backup. I want to.
Blu-ray is the one physical media that people will go out and collect. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, there's a lot of people that still buy DVDs, and there's a lot of people still buy, I mean, if they can get it on it, but you never know. They might put out like a special edition on VHS. There are VHS out there that just love that stuff.
Yep. Oh yeah. I mean, it's doing that, that classic feel. I remember when I was in college or after college, there was a guy I knew who went out and collected 8-track cassettes. Well, who had an 8-track player anymore? Well, they were kind of cool and nobody had them anymore. So he was going out and collecting them. So now people are collecting VHS. It's kind of like the rise of vinyl again, though, too. People are going out and getting that. So, yeah.
The only difference is vinyl still sounds good. VHS sounds like crap.
That's true. Yeah, does sound good.
Also,
that's not the only difference. The other difference is when I was a kid, you could buy a record for $2. Now you got to pay $25.
Yeah, that's true.
And I believe the magnetic tape for the VHS, it has a lifespan. So
yeah, it degrades after a while.
Yeah.
That's why I don't even bother to play my VHS tapes, because I'm like, I don't even want to know if it doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
If it doesn't, then I'm going to have to go out and find it again. And
I'm just going to pretend they do.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out what this VHS thing is that you guys are talking about.
Yeah.
Well, you see, back when we were children.
Yeah, Todd's a young man. He doesn't know.
I just wanted to add one thing on Netflix. I don't know if you listened to Kevin Smith's podcast. But he was saying that since his indie movies have been hitting Netflix, his titles have been getting a resurgence. It's definitely good for the last stop, but like Tusk, not a lot of people saw it. But once it hit Netflix, it got a resurgence. And then with that, other people are seeking out his other films.
It's also because he's Kevin Smith, though, too. Yeah.
I think
it's like Ed Burns. Ed Burns can make a $9,000 feature because he's Ed Burns. It's same type of thing. Yeah.
I do think Netflix offers a great opportunity for exposure.
Yeah.
Not so much an opportunity to get your investors their money back.
Yeah.
We've heard some stories about that, too, about people that have gotten their movies on either Netflix or Amazon or something like that, and then getting paid, they're like, you only get like 4 cents for every time it's played or something like that. And you're going, what? Yeah. They got like 5 million views, but we're only getting 4 cents a view. And then you got to divide that up amongst 20 people,
And a lot of the movies and shows are hidden within, you got to search for what you want.
Yeah.
That's why you should go track it down on VOD, pay for it,
yeah,
so that the people can get their money back, Then go buy it on VHS. Do what you gotta do. VHS on DVD.
Oh yeah. So you went old school right there.
Yeah. Buy it on Betamax and Laserdisc.
Yeah. Laserdisc.
Flipbook.
8mm.
Get a flipbook and then an audio recording to play along with it.
Oh. High, yeah, that's high the big eight.
Thing. The low budget indies. I mean the idea is. I mean it's really sort of a post facto crowdfunding. I mean. They don't cost much to make. We don't have the money to put up to shoot them initially, so the budget's very small. And then afterwards, we just need to make back what we put into it or what our investors put into it so that we can make the next one. And it's – I call it sort of post-facto crowdfunding because everyone pays $4 or $5 to rent it and – If enough people do that, then we get our investors their money back, and we can get on to the next
and
one.
Maybe make a profit, you know, to put into the next one, because that's what Kevin was talking earlier. He said that, you know, one of our filmmaker friends moved from one state down to Georgia, and that's what he does. He lives from film to film. You know, he makes the movie, and if it makes back enough money plus something else to make the next movie, then the next movie is made.
Yeah.
If it doesn't make back enough to make the next movie, then he's out of a job, basically, because is what he does for a living.
But they also, the movies that they do are more
exploitation
on the
film.
Exploitation level, where it's more crazy gore and, like, you know, it's more over the top for sure. So they do a lot of funding even beforehand. So the movie will be filmed, but they're doing self-distribution for the most part, and they're doing like Indiegogo and stuff like that to like fund the actual like production of the Blu-ray disc. And it comes with special features, like different, like, you know, levels, you know, like are unlocked after it gets to a certain point, and they're doing really well with it. Not everyone's been able to make it work.
I'm curious if I know who you're talking about, because I know a couple of filmmakers who do that. So
Well, I mean, it's not really a secret, you know?
Yeah, it's
not. No.
Here's the most recent one I've gotten from them. It's called Amazon Hotbox.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I know exactly who you're talking about then. So, okay. Yes.
All right.
Yep. So, when you said they were up there and they moved down to Georgia.
Yeah.
I was at Horror Hound this time last year in Indianapolis and met Brian.
Yep.
And saw
and Ellie. Do you meet Ellie too?
No, she wasn't there.
Oh,
but
Ellie's amazing.
Yeah, but I saw Space Bathe from Outer Space.
Nice.
I actually have the T-shirt. So yes.
That, and how ridiculous is that theme song?
Where
it just gets stuck in your head for like ever.
Ever. Yeah. No, I love the film. I've watched it twice actually.
Yeah.
So, that was fantastic.
For Todd who doesn't know about Space Bathe from Outer Space, these aliens come down and they're called Scroats, and they're testicles. And they're it's over the top. They're fun.
So Brian made a space adventure sex comedy.
Yeah.
You know, it's basically like you'd see back in the 80s, you know, where they'd make these like really bizarre sex comedies, you know.
Yep.
He just took the idea and put it in outer space. And you got Ellie Church, Alyssa Winkler, you know, can't think of the other one.
And each movie is...
I actually want to do a film with Brian. I would love to do that.
I was gonna say each movie is sort of like unique, you know. It's not all like comedy horror, you know, exploitation, you know. Like Harvest Lake was something totally
that's when he was working with another what's his name,
Scott
what's his last name though,
Shermer.
Scott Shermer, who made Headless, and he made Harvest Lake. There's a bunch, but they were really trippy, weird movies. And then he moved from there to Georgia, and he was working with the guy who did Frankenstein Created Bikers. And
I'm friends with him on Facebook and Ellie and all that, so I keep up with what they do. And it's cool.
So there's different ways to go about like.
Right.
Everything. So,
yeah,
you know, it's the most important part is that independent films are still being made. Yeah. You know, and and 9 times out of 10, they're better than a lot of the big budget stuff I'm seeing in the main screen, you know, theaters.
Well, they're just their remakes or superhero movies. That's
There's nothing wrong with that.
No.
At the same time, too.
Yeah.
Why don't you let some originality in the theaters as well?
And there has been some originality. I mean, A Quiet Place, Hereditary.
Which I love. Yeah, which I loved. Yeah.
You know, Hereditary, and even The Nun, which Kevin and I saw over the weekend, you know, I mean, so there are those ones out there that are original. But Kevin's right. It's like, you know, 9 times out of 10, the indie horror film is better than, you know, the Hollywood film.
Yeah. I've said it a million times.
They put more heart into it.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was going to say. The people that listen to the show regularly are going to be sick of me saying it, but you find more people, they actually care about the movie, the ones that are making it.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're all passion projects.
Right.
No one on an independent film set's doing it for the money.
Yeah. I mean, I love the Marvel movies, but you watch an interview with all the cast on Conan and they ask them questions about their character and they're like, I don't know, I want to read comic books. Like, they don't know.
Right. Yeah.
It's crazy. Well, anyways.
So we got about 8 minutes left of the live show. And what we're going to do is we're going to play the trailer one last time. And let's see, Todd, would you like to introduce?
I think it's Mike's turn to introduce.
Mike's turn.
Oh, yeah.
Mike. Yeah.
All right, folks, this is the trailer for Three, An Eye for an Eye, directed by Lou Simon. It is out on VOD now. It dropped on DVD today. Enjoy.
Where is this thing taking me?
I'm going to move your car back about 10 feet so I can get my car through.
Oh my God.
Aren't you going to help me?
I can't touch him. You to do this for me.
He has to pay for what he did to you.
And if he refuses to confess?
He will have no other choice if he ever wants to get out of here.
Hello!
You can scream all you want. No one can hear you out here. I need you to confess.
I don't know what you're talking about.
How many pieces is she going to find you?
You need to take your medication, or you lose control.
Tell me we have the right guy downstairs.
You have to believe me.
You could have stopped this.
Let the trailer run out on this story. The reason he asked you about Ellie or Eli is because one time Ellie was in the chat room during one of our shows and Leo said, oh, Eli Church is in the house. And this, so we don't let him forget it. And then I guess it was a convention shortly thereafter. Someone was walking around with a name tag that says, hi, my name is Eli.
Eli. Okay. That's funny. Wow.
Yeah.
When I'm in my defense, when I'm running a show, I'm juggling a lot of balls
Yeah. Anyway,
there is no defense.
There is always a defense. Always.
Ronald Reynolds. Okay.
So we want to urge you. You know, if you like independent film, if you want to support original films, definitely check out Three, An Eye for an Eye. It's out now on DVD and out on VOD. If you check the show notes down below or up above, you'll find the links to check it out. And also to follow our awesome guests here, and including Lou, which she was not able to join us tonight. She wasn't feeling too well, but we have all her information. And she has a nice picture of Tony Todd on her IMDb.
Nice.
From one of her movies. Yeah.
Tony's the best. Yes. We're friends.
Did you see their redoing Candyman?
No. Yes.
Jordan Peele is going to redo Candyman.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
The only way that it'll work is if Tony's in it again.
I'm just kind of curious. I mean, Jordan Peele proved himself last year with Get Out, you know? So, I mean,
Did he though?
Did he?
Okay.
I'm probably in the minority. I wasn't a huge fan of the movie.
I liked it. I mean, it was Stepford Wives, but it was still good.
Yeah, it was fine.
It goes back to what I was saying before about the creep factor. It was more creepy.
Yeah.
You know.
And yeah. I could go with that.
And that's you know it didn't freak me out because again, I don't get freaked out. I bet.
Right.
But I do get creeped out, and that's what that movie did for me.
Yeah.
But anyways. We're going to talk about exactly. The movie. So you guys had some stories about maybe some people in the back that were giving you guys shit.
Yeah. So the location was fantastic. This house that we found in Chattanooga was on this amazing hill, like right outside the city, and right next to Raccoon Caverns. If you guys know Chattanooga at all, Raccoon Caverns, a pretty famous tourist attraction there. And the house is literally across the street from it. So the cavern system sort of extends underneath the house to a certain extent. And this house, when we originally scouted it, it was being renovated by the owner. And we toured it, and the owner had a few tenants there who were renting, and he was renovating it at the same time. And so major parts of the house, and especially the basement, were unfinished. But he promised us that by the time we shot in July, that all the renovations were going to be finished. So we arrived there in July, and to our surprise, the renovations were not finished, and the tenants are still there. He also had promised us we have the whole house to ourselves. There won't be any of the tenants will be gone. But there were still tenants there. And part of the house was still not finished. In fact, one of the major locations in the house that we wanted to use, one of the super cinematic rooms that if you watch the movie, that sunroom that you see he and she have a couple of scenes in, this has these amazing views. But it wasn't finished. It had no floor. So it had the beams or whatever that formed the ceiling of the attic and the floor, the floor joists. But there was no flooring over it. It just, there were the joists and then dropped straight down to the unfinished basement. we were determined to shoot these scenes there, though. So we set up pieces of plywood that we could put the sofa on, and then we set up planks that we could run so that at least we had pathways to walk from two different entrances to get to the sofa. So for those scenes that you see in the sunroom, we are walking, we're trying to walk casually to the sofa, but if you watch those scenes, keep in mind that we had about this much space to walk on. And if we go to one side or the other, it's a 20-foot drop into the basement.
That's crazy.
The house was trying to kill us. We also lost power one time. I think we had a rain. We had heavy rains one day, and the basement got flooded.
Yeah, flooded the basement. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we blew the breakers on the entire house. But the big thing was the tenants in the back. In the back of the house was this almost like a connected guest house where this older couple were tenants. And we were promised by the owner that they were going to be gone at least for the 2 weeks that we were going to be there shooting, but they weren't. They were there the entire time we were shooting, and they had a little one of those little yappy dogs, and the woman there used to like to play her television very loud, and there were several times where we had to ask her, could you please turn the TV down, or could you please make your dog stop barking? And it got to the point where toward the end of the shoot, I think, Mike, you had already left by then.
Yeah, I'd already wrapped at that point, yeah.
By the end of the shoot, the woman had enough. And she came out. We were shooting by the pool. We were shooting out by the pool one day. And they pulled their SUV up right next to the pool. And so we had to go over and ask them, could you please move your car because we're shooting here? And she lost it and started yelling at us. that we were disrupting her life, and she hasn't been able to sleep for the past week and a half, and we're, her dog is a nervous wreck. And I'm like,
that dog was a nervous wreck to begin with. Yeah.
And Lou was conspicuously absent during this confrontation, leaving. And I think Alan was gone. The other producer, I don't remember where Alan was either, but they have a habit of not being there when the, so anyway, I was the only producer there. So I had to stand up and deal with this lady. I apologized profusely. I'm very sorry that we're disturbing you during the film shoot that we had rented the entire house and the property for, and that you're not even supposed to be here. But I apologize. It's completely our fault. What can I do to make you happy right now? Would you like to watch us film? Would you like some craft service? I was trying everything with this woman to make her happy so that we could finish our day, because we only had 12 days to shoot this whole thing anyway. So even a few minute delay was like nerve wracking, because we didn't have time to spare. So, but that's low budget indie filmmaking. And it's a wonderful thing, and we got the film done. That's the bottom line.
So just out of curiosity, what did she want to make her happy that day? Like,
I don't even remember. I don't think
it was it was a lap dance from what I heard.
Yeah, yeah.
We promised we would never speak of that again.
Actually, not she's all. She's one of the bags in the basement.
Oh. Yeah, she's.
Maybe that's why the dog was a nervous wreck.
Now, when we say bag, we don't mean, you know,
like, yeah, not an old bag.
No,
like
no,
a different kind of bag, like right. A body bag. Yes. anyway,
an old knit bag.
Yeah.
But seriously, folks.
Yeah, anyway, waka waka. Am I right?
Yeah.
Well, regardless, you guys still did an excellent job. We absolutely enjoyed this film and urge everybody to check it out. And like we've been saying before, just check the show notes down below or up above. You'll find all the information about our awesome guests, along with where you can find this film out on VOD and Amazon as well. And what we'll do is we'll wrap things up, starting with Todd. Where do you like people following you on social media?
I'm on Facebook, Todd.Bruno, Todd_Bruno on all the other social medias. I am Snapchat, Twitter. It's all Todd_Bruno. I'm pretty easy to find. If you do watch the movie, shoot me a message. Let me know what you think, and let me know if you guessed the ending, because I'm betting you won't.
And don't lie, because he'll know.
Hey, if I didn't guess the ending.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mike.
Yeah. You can find me. I'm on Facebook as well. Mike Stanley, just on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram, MD Stanley One, like medical doctor, MD Stanley One. I use that mostly. I've got Twitter. I don't use it a whole lot, but it's actor M Stanley. And you can find me on IMDb as well. I'm Mike Stanley number one. There's several Mike Stanleys, but there's only one Mike Stanley. So that one's mine. And yeah, and make sure, like Todd said, if you watch the movie, yeah, drop me a line. I'd like to know the ending too. And also make sure that you give us a review on IMDb and on Amazon and whatever VOD platform you decide to watch, or buy the DVD. It's on sale today. You can buy it now through various places, Amazon probably more than likely. So, yeah.
And Amazon's the most important. If you're going to leave a review, we would love you to leave a review. Leave it on Amazon. That does us the most.
Yeah. Yeah.
On Amazon.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. And if you're going to buy it, might as well do it through Amazon anyway. You get it in 2 days. Yeah.
Amazon's been very good to us.
Very. We love the Amazon.
Wolfman.
You can find me on YouTube, the 13th Wolfman, Twitter at the 13th Wolfman, Tumblr, 13th Wolfman, The Prowl. Every Sunday on the Dorkening, Tuesday on Wicked Horror Show, doing the horror one with Kev. When we're done with that, I'll be doing the Wicked Horror reviews. And tomorrow I should have a new sit down up, because my whole week got tossed into shambles this week. So I didn't get my editing done in time. That's a there's gonna be a video about that too. Don't worry. So
yeah. So
Kev,
it's a hard life you live, Wolfie.
It is. It is.
Anyways, you can find me A Knuckle on Twitter and Instagram every Sunday, doing the Dorkening Tuesday Wicked Horror Show, doing stuff with Wolfie, and we have Super Mega Fest coming up in a couple, a month, right?
Yeah.
Super Mega Fest, and then we have Scarecon New York. We're gonna be busy.
We are.
But anyways,
we got to plan it accordingly because I have limited vacation time left.
Oh, well, I never.
Yeah.
I want to thank you guys, too. This has been so much fun. I really appreciate you guys having us.
This Thanks. Is great. We really appreciate it. It's anytime somebody wants to let us spout off and be silly and whatever. But really, it's great to get behind the film and push it. And we've really got some great support from it. We really appreciate it. From the fans and people that have watched and folks that want to talk to us. We really do appreciate that.
Well, it's our pleasure, you know?
Yeah, I mean, speaking for Kevin and myself, we're horror fans first. So if we can get someone on here to talk to us about what it's like to make a movie, I mean, we're going to enjoy it just as much.
Yeah.
You That's know? Great.
That's good. We appreciate it.
Well, we do this show multiple times a week, every Sunday at 10 a.m. You can join us for the Dorkening Roundtable discussion about geeky topics. Every Tuesday is the Wicked Horror Show. We do this live every Tuesday at 9 p.m. Eastern. And every other Thursday, we do our Ultimate Video Games show. And with that, we'll catch you guys later. Have a good night. Bye.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
I hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, please make sure you subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you want to be part of a future show, you can find us over on YouTube or Facebook, where we broadcast all our episodes multiple times a week live in front of an online audience where you can interact with us and our guests. Our main show, The Dorkening, is produced live on Sundays at 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific. The Wicked Horror Show comes at you Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. And the Ultimate Video Game Show zooms in on Thursdays at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. This has been a Dorkening Network production powered by New Media Promotions. You can learn more about our network by heading on over to www.thedorkening.com.